Maybe I just know the right questions to ask. How many of you in the last 2 weeks or in the next week have worried about something? How many of you, same time frame, have allowed that worry to stay with you for more than one day? How many of you have wished that it would go away? How many of you have wished that it would go away, prayed it away, and you've just done everything you can do, but for whatever reason, it's still there? So we're, you know, over halfway through the semester, and midterms are here. We're about to get done with those, and we'll head into more either competitions, more games, more events, more practices, more lists. And you're probably going to have more worries. And you're going to have more concerns, and you're going to have more things that in the next week that you don't even know about yet are going to show up, and they're going to lead you to be afraid. They're going to lead you to wish something away, and they're just going to weigh on you. They're going to, in general, just going to weigh on you. So I want to speak to that version of you, that person of you, that posture within you that says, dang it, I wish, fill in the blank. Dang it, I want, fill in the blank. And I want to read from an obscure passage in 1 Kings chapter 19. And I'm just going to read a few verses. It's about Elijah, who is a great prophet. And actually, in 1 Kings chapter 19, Elijah has just gone up against a whole bunch. I mean, scores and scores of prophets of false gods. And he's basically gone toe-to-toe with them. And he's proved that there's one true God. And this one true God is greater than all these other false gods. And he's somewhat tired. He's just actually experienced this great miracle of the Lord. And yet, in 1 Kings 19, it starts off in verse 3 there. It says, Elijah was afraid. This great man of the Lord who just did this incredible thing, who's seen God's power, who's even called down God's power and fire from heaven to prove how powerful God is, it says in verse 3, even Elijah was afraid. And he ran for his life. I'm going to read a little bit here, so don't doze off. Don't think about if you have any dinner, or, you know, a phone call later in the midterm. Just be present right here. He was afraid and he ran for his life. And when he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there. And while he was with him, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, he came to a broom bush and he sat down under it and he prayed that he might die. The man, the great man of God, Elijah, is saying, God, freaking just take my life. And I want to say, what? I'm confused. If I had like an actual Bible here, I'd be underlining it. I'd write a circle, a question mark, and say, what the what? But you know what it is to be afraid, to forget the power of God, and to just be in this place where you're like, you know what, just can it just be done? I have had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. And then he lay down under that bush, and he fell asleep. And when he awoke, an angel of the Lord touched him and said, get up and eat. He looked around, and there by his head, God had provided some baked bread over hot coals and a jar of water. And so he ate and drank, but he was still stinking tired. Stinking is my commentary on it. He was still tired. And so he laid back down again. How many of you have been worried, overwhelmed, stressed, afraid, and so you say, screw it, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to skip that class, and I'm going to forget about that worry, and I'm just going to sleep through that mess. This is Elijah was the first one to do it. Elijah showed us how to do it. And the angel of the Lord came back a second time, touched him and said, get up and eat, for the journey that God has for you is too much. So you must eat and you must drink. And so he did. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, or the mountain of God. And there he went into a cave and he spent the night. Homeboy is really tired. He went back to sleep again, slept through the night. And then it said, and the word of the Lord, he's a prophet, this is kind of what happens. The word of the Lord came to Elijah. And the word of the Lord said this, what are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I have been very zealous for the Lord God Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I, God, am the only one left. That's why I'm in this freaking cave, why I'm taking naps, why I'm afraid and want to die. I'm the only one left. And now they're trying to kill me too. And the Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And this is code language for the Lord is going to strengthen you. The Lord is going to give you a word that's going to sustain you. God is going to refill your tank. If you're on empty, God is going to pass by, and he's going to fill that tank so that it overflows. And so he did that. It says, then a great and powerful wind tore through the mountains tore them apart, shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord wasn't in this incredibly great wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. The ground shook beneath Elijah's feet, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake, a great fire came, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. Some theologians and biblical scholars believe that a gentle whisper is actually best translated in the sound of sheer silence. And when Elijah heard this gentle whisper, he pulled his cloak over his face, and he went out and stood in the mouth of the cave. For God was in the whisper. And the voice said to him again, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" I'm going to stop here. The Lord gives him a word and tells him where to go. And then the very next chapter, he meets Elisha, who was to carry the burden of doing prophecy for on behalf of God. And so there was a new plan for Elijah's life. But at this moment, Elijah was looking for God, and he was hoping for God to rescue him. But all the things where God perhaps should show up, God wasn't showing up. He wasn't in the gale force hurricane wind. How many of you, if there was a hurricane wind and all the windows shattered in this room, after we had just prayed, "God, show up, God, show up," and all the glass broke, and we're all, "Holy snap, God's here, like God is here," wouldn't we? We'd be like, God was there, but God's not in that. And then there was an earthquake. What if we just got done, we all stood up, held hands, and we were just calling the name of the Lord, and then there was an earthquake? Wouldn't you expect God to be in the earthquake? But it says God wasn't in that earthquake. And then a fire shows up out of nowhere? If we're just praying, like singing to God, and then a fire starts up? I don't even know how to picture that. We would say God's in that fire, but it was not in any of those things. It was in the sound of sheer silence. Let me talk about the silence for just a minute, and then I have one thing I want to say. Just one, it's like quotable, tweetable. You should write it in your journal. You should write it down and think about it. I want to give you one thing. But when I talk about silence, ours is a world devoid of silence, isn't it? Do you ever notice that Facebook has no bottom? Like, you can just keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. Same with Twitter. Same with Snapchat. I mean, the feed is infinite, right? It goes on forever. There's more words than we know what to do with. And the more words we have, the less they actually mean. Ours is a loud world. A loud world. There's this guy, his name's Bernie Krause, and he's a former record producer in the 1960s, late 50s, mid-60s. But in the mid-60s, he took a career shift, and he started moving from recording live guys in studios, live bands, and those kinds of things. He was actually into jazz and like a hip-hop kind of jazz type of sound. And he decided, "I'm going to take a career change, and I'm actually just going to go out into nature, and I'm going to record soundscapes of natural sounds." And so in 1968, 1967, he ventured out, and he started recording just, like, tree frogs barking in the night. I don't know if that's what I call barking. Croaking, there you go. They're not barking. That'd be weird. God's not in the bark of the tree frog. But he said back in 1968, if he wanted to get 1 to 2 hours of real unadulterated, just natural sound, 1 hour of sound took him about 1 to 2 hours. Fast forward to today. To get 1 hour of uninterrupted natural sound, whether you're on the beach or in the mountains, whether you're in the U.S. or you're in South America or somewhere in the plains of Africa, on average, it takes over 2,000 hours to get uninterrupted sound. Uninterrupted meaning it's not, there's no, you know, plane going by, motorcycle off in the distance, boat passing off just the coast of the waves, honking its horn. It's 2,000 hours. We don't know what it is to live in a silent world. We don't. And if you're like me, which I'm just going to say everybody is in this vein, you can't turn your mind off, right? Psychologists say that on average, we, in our own minds, every minute of waking day that we're awake, we're having a conversation with ourselves between 500 and 17 words a minute. Just in ourselves. And psychologists also say that 95% of that conversation is repetitive. It's the same conversation we had yesterday, and it's the same conversation we're going to have tomorrow. And you know what this conversation is. You had it. You're doing it right now. You're judging whether or not you agree with what it is I say. You're deciding this is right, this is wrong, this is good, this is bad. He likes me, she doesn't. This is good, and I should pursue this. This is not good. And sometimes you're not even doing that. You've already made your decisions. You've already decided, pre-decided to be afraid and to be worried and to carry your burden. And so you come into a situation like this, and you're just going to be that burdened person because of the noise of our own heads. And God is saying to Elijah, turn off your freaking brain and just be still. Join me in the silence. And I just took inventory. How many of us have midterms? We had them 2 weeks ago. We'll have them again for another 5, 7 to 10 days. How many of us have practice? How many have coaches who are riding you a little bit? Who are on your case, a professor who's demanding something, you got a paper that you're working on that you don't want to write, you know you have to write it, and so it's hard for you to pay attention to what I'm saying in the solid, like, 15 or 20 minutes that I'm going to talk. You can't be present here because of everything else going on out there. Ours is a loud world. We don't know what it is to be silent. And the great spiritual teachers would tell us there are three great correctives. Hear it? You hear the siren? Three great correctives to get us out of our heads, to get us out of our worries and our fears, and to help us to be able to see again, to hear again. And the first is service. Service is something that perhaps many of you do. That's not the talk I'm giving tonight. Maybe you're on your team and you're concerned with your teammates, and that's a great way to get out of your head because you're concerned about somebody else. Paul writes about this in Philippians 2. Jesus teaches of it, you know, again and again and again, and that our life is found in giving our lives away to others. The second one, I'm sorry, it's suffering. How many of you have been hit with something you weren't expecting? Either a failure, an injury, a death in the family, and it sort of woke you up. You know what I'm talking about? Where you were going, and the train and the brain and everything was just doing its thing. You know, same thoughts, same worries, same concerns, and then you hit with that news. And you see with new eyes. I'm not going to talk about suffering tonight. Some of you get silence simply from suffering. And then others of us, the third corrective is chosen silence, what the great mystics have called prayer. And prayer, the way that I like to describe prayer, is being present to the presence. You know what's funny about this story in 1 Kings 19? If Elijah would have just been paying attention, there was silence available to him everywhere he was. Silence available to him before he left his servant. Silence available to him 40 days and nights in the desert. Silence available to him before he made the mountain of God trek up the mountain into that cave. Silence available to him every time he started to doze off in those naps and that sleep that he had. And yet it wasn't until, and he experienced suffering, and he wanted to die, and he experienced service. He had given his life as a prophet to the Lord, but he wasn't awoke enough to get God in those places, and so God just overwhelmed him again in true silence. And so I want to invite us to the idea that we should choose silence. And I was trying to think tonight, you know, Brooke texted me, I don't know when you texted me, Sunday, Monday? And I was thinking, he said, you know, he gave me a suggestion on perhaps what to talk about. And I knew I wanted to share what I'm about to say, but I thought, I don't know if at 19 or 20, you guys are all smarter than I was at 19 or 20. So I'm sure you'll be able to get it. But I was like, I don't know if I can get this. I don't know if I would be able to get this. Because my mind is always racing. If I were 20, 21, I'm just going to tell you, if I would have come in this room, 20-year-old version of Kevin, I would have had shorter hair. I would have been wearing glasses. I would have had a little less thinness around my waist and stuff. And I would have been concerned. I would have looked in the mirror a couple times before I came in here and checked myself out. And I would have been concerned while we were singing about what girls were doing. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'd have been thinking about what guys I was standing beside and if they thought I was, you know, worth standing beside. And I would have been, like, competing and comparing and judging, and I would have been full on into it. And maybe that's just me. I'm just confessing that. And it would have been hard for me to hear silence because it's really hard for me to turn this freaking thing off. How about you? And so I don't know if it's too difficult, but I don't think that it is. But I'm telling you that you need to be present to God's presence in your life because God is all up in your life. And the one thing I want to say, and this is what helps my racing mind. This is what helps me slow down the noise. This is what helps me get out of my fear, get out of my worry, to give me perspective on so many different things. And it's just a simple statement that you will never get there. You can only be here. You will never get there. You can only be here. You take midterms and you're going to UC Berkeley to get a degree. And there is a there. Sure, you're going to get a degree. But if you're always living there, you will never be here. And once you get there, you won't be there. You'll be thinking about what's after there. And tonight, I just want to remind you that there is no there. There is no there. How many of you, you don't have to raise your hand, at one point in time, wanted to be a student and get into Cal? Everybody, you applied, you got in, you're here. Now that you're here, how many of you are just so content that you're here? You're not worried about what's next, you're not concerned with the future, you're fully present being here. How many of you long to be a Division I athlete? To play the sport that you play, to play it at a high level, and to be invited on or to work your way onto a team so that you compete at this level? Most of you're here. You're there. But how many of you are not enjoying that there because you're concerned with what's after there? What's after here? I call it the win-then syndrome. I talk to the football players about it a lot. It started in high school early for me, man. When I get my license, then life will be great because I can go out. I won't need my parents to drive me anywhere. When I get a car, then I will be able to take my car wherever I want to go. When I get a girlfriend, then I will have arrived and my life will make sense. When I figure out what college I'm going to go to, then life will be great. When I get into that college and I meet a girl and I pursue her and then we get married, then my life will get together. And then I met my wife, Nikki. And then we said, you know, when we have kids and figure out our careers, then we will finally be there. And can I just tell you that you'll never get there? You can only ever be here. It's the one place we always are and the one place we never want to be, and it's right here, right now. This is what Jesus talks about in Matthew 6 when he says, do not worry about your life. When I read that, I think, come on, Jesus, give me a break. This is the least practical teaching of everything you teach. But what he's saying is stop living in the past. Stop so worried, caught up in the future, and just be here now. God takes care of the birds of the air, the lilies of the field. How much more valuable are you than they? Be here now. There was a mentor of mine, and I was a part of a church in Los Angeles called Mosaic, and it's a big mega church deal. They have 7 or 8 campuses, and they have a pseudo-celebrity pastor, and he's written all these books, and they have Hollywood, the big shots that go to our church and all this different stuff. And he talked about his journey as a young pastor. He was in his early 30s when he wrote his first book. And then he got caught on fire a little bit, and he got to travel the world and speak all over, and then he got to speak at like TED, and then he got to speak at these big church conferences, and then people, when he would go to these places, would be like, and then the church started to grow. It started as a church of like 300 or 400 people when he was the pastor when he came in, and now it's a church of like 7,000 or 10,000 people, and he said, with every 1,000 more people that came, I thought that we would finally get there. And then he learned that every there that he got to wasn't real. It wasn't satisfying. It wasn't enough. And he started to learn that there's no there. The invitation of God is to just enjoy today. Enjoy the journey. Can I tell you how you're doing right now is how you're going to do next Thursday? Some of you are really looking forward to next Thursday. You're really looking forward to it. You're saying, when I get to next Thursday, then life is going to be good. And I'm going to be in a better mood. Can I tell you, if you're grumpy now, you're going to be grumpy next Thursday. Because let me just be honest with you, you're grumpy. Some of you think, like, when I get that title, when I go on that vacation, do you know when you get on that beach and you're laying on that towel, you're going to be just as grumpy then about how you forgot your sunscreen and, you know, the food wasn't that good and your stomach's kind of upset and you didn't get to go on the day trip with your friends that they wanted to go to, and you're just going to be grumpy. Why? Because you're always living somewhere else instead of right where you are. And how you are now is how you're going to be then. And so I just want to tell you, be here now. My greatest sin is what I'm talking about right now. Sin being missing the mark. Sin being living outside of what God has for me. Sin being not being aware of God's love. Here's my greatest sin. Greatest in that is the one that I consistently pursue. I am never present. How about you? I'm always somewhere else. I'm living in the past. I took the StrengthsFinder. I've taken it 2 or 3 times. My number one strength, every test I've taken, futuristically. I'm always living somewhere else. 5 and 10 years down the road, thinking about how can we get there? How can we do this? What strategy? How can I? Strategic is number 2. And I'm just concerned with getting somewhere else. And you know my greatest tool, the great weapon I use to destroy this present moment? It's my phone. How about you? This is my anti-being present to God silence tool. Because if I'm on BART, if I'm in a restaurant in line, if I'm standing awkwardly in a hallway, the first thing I do is like, what's going on? Or if I'm with my kids, you know the first thing I think? I should capture this moment. And I should post it somewhere for people to like. All the while concerned with the perfect lighting and getting the perfect shot, that I never liked the moment myself. I was too caught up in what people would think about it later. This is no way to live. This will lead you to where Elijah was, looking for God in the hurricane, in the fire, in the great earthquakes, the things that everyone's like, ooh. Ah, did you feel that? Did you see that? Can I just tell you that if you can't be present to God in this moment, then you're just going to miss it when that moment comes. Psalm 46:10 says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted among the earth. God in this moment, everything that could be true of you and everything that will be true about God 10 years from now when you get there is true now. I'm being dramatic and preachery. Guys, you sure, there may be things about your life where God's like, back it up. That's not healthy. Go this way. But can I tell you, like, your essence, this imago Dei, this image of God that is within you, God is love, and God can't help but create love. And God created you in his image. Thomas Merton says, love is your first name. That before you're student athlete, before you're accomplished this, that, or the other thing, before you're D1 this, before you're future Cal grad this, before you're the best girlfriend ever, the best boyfriend that the world will ever know. You are love. And so as you pursue these other things, the thing that is truest to you has always been true and will always be true. And the invitation of the gospel is to be present to it. To find that silent space to where you can turn off your head. And you can turn off your worry. Not that those realities aren't real. But to just be present that right here, right now, I am enough. God is love and I am enough. And that's what I mean by being present to the presence. Because the presence is everywhere. God can't help but give away God. This is what God is always moving us here. And he's doing it right now for you. And if I were in here, and I would have not heard that last thing I said. No, I'm not enough, is what I would say. No, I'm not worthy of being beloved. Because I haven't done it for a while. So I just want to say it again. You are beloved. That is your first name. God loves you just as you are. things to worry about tomorrow? Yes. Things you need to do after this meeting? Yes. But in this moment, can you just be present to God's presence and hear Him say, I love you. Just as you are. If you're overwhelmed with midterm 2 weeks ago, won't come in this week. If you're tired and fatigued from the practice, and the practices and lifts, the game this weekend, tomorrow, the meet, where you know that your coach is going to be angry, and the resource awaiting you is ever available to you in this present moment, if you would just be present to God's presence. And so I want to do this. I want to close with a short prayer. And just invite us to be present to God's presence. And I wanted us to pray Psalm 46:10. And this is a prayer practice participated by across many different faiths, and it's just repeating this verse and taking a word off each time. Be still and know that I'm God. And you say that in a moment of just being still. Be still and know that I'm God. And then you say that same sentence or verse again. This is Lectio Divina. This is reading the scripture as a form of prayer. And you chop off the last word. Be still and know that I'm God. And then you stop. You say it again after breathing for just a couple minutes, a couple seconds. Be still and know. And then be still. And then just be. And you say a prayer of thanksgiving. And then you keep going. Because we all need to keep going. We all have things we're responsible to and things that we're here for. But to be present to the presence. Be still and know that I'm God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know. Be still. So I'm going to lead us through that prayer exercise, and then I'm done. Would you pray with me? And would you repeat as I pray aloud, just repeat right after I say it, the thing that I say. Be present to it. Don't be concerned about how loud you say it or who the person next to you is saying it. Just be present to what it is that you're doing. Be still and know that I am God. God, quiet us down enough that we might hear you. Quiet us down enough to hear you say that we are enough. May we be quiet enough to hear what's true and be able to distinguish what's true and not true, what's important and what's just trivial. And God, strengthen us tank. We need you. So many, I know. I don't even need to know the details. I know. We are weighed down. Sometimes we're very lost. And we need you, God. Help us to be still. To be present to your presence and to gain strength and identity and to remember that we're made in your image from that presence. Pray this in